There are things in this world that science cannot explain.
Things that conjure malevolence where kindness used to live.
There are entities beyond comprehension that lurk just beyond our sight.
They twist in the shadows, festering in the darkest parts of a mind.
There are relics left behind from time to time, mysterious reminders of eldritch nightmares past.
Heirlooms that bring pestilence, mysterious gifts that contort innocence, evidence that something is coming.
These items are collected and stored in a secret location.
We study them, cataloging their mysteries, bearing witness to their butchery.
Access to this location is strictly prohibited, save for a select few brave or foolish individuals.
Terror lines the halls in the Scarab Archives.
Is it working? Oh. I guess that little squiggly blue line means it is. You think someone with as much experience as I have with technology would know how to work a digital voice recorder. Oh, where to begin? Introductions, I suppose. The voice you are currently hearing is the voice of Dr. Delbert East. I am the current curator and, for lack of a better term, caretaker of the Scarab Archives. If you do not know what the Scarab Archives are, that means that you have come by this recording by nefarious means, and your life is quite possibly in serious danger. But if you're a new hire, or my replacement, or more likely one of those interns that my superiors seem intent on foisting upon me, well then, I suppose I'll give you a bit of a history lesson. The Scarab Archives are the main collection and donation point for the Lazarus Foundation. The Lazarus Foundation was founded by one Vladimir Lazarus in the late 1980s. Vladimir Lazarus accrued an enormous personal fortune through various entertainment and business ventures from roughly 1955 to 1985. And in 1985, he decided to found the Lazarus Foundation. And the foundation, of course, is dedicated to the research and development into various avenues of the supernatural persuasion. Basically, we're ghost hunters. But that's not even fair. Some of us, myself included, don't even believe in ghosts. I came on board after, in some of my research into a project for my doctorate into ancient Sumerian literature. Very niche market, I agree, but one that I'm quite proud to call my own. I stumbled across something disturbing. Evidence of entities beyond our understanding, lurking just beyond the veil of our existence, beyond our means of perceiving them. Particularly, I believe there are five of these entities that are stronger than the rest. Five, for the lack of a better term, great evils. When I brought my research forward, I was laughed out of my university, although I was granted my doctorate because of my superbly researched work. The silver lining, of course, is that it brought me on board here at the Lazarus Foundation. I wanted to do more field work, but my superior, one Dr. Gordon Stewart, and Stewart, I hope you are listening to this, because you pompous ass, you have impeded me every step of the way. This project, these recordings, this is entirely on your head. My sincerest hope is that you will find these, you will listen to them, you will get irritated by the sound of my voice, and you will boot me out of the archives and stick some other doddering old fool in here and let me get back to my work. I have been working here in the Scarab Archives for about 6 months now, and it's not the worst place I've ever worked. I worked at a fast food establishment for a few days back when I was 16, and that was infinitely worse. Of course, the fast food establishment didn't have relics inside, potentially touched by world-ending abomination gods, so there's that going for it. Mostly it's the crushing boredom and a sudden bout of carpal tunnel has rendered me unable to continue my notes in cataloging the thousands of items currently housed in the archives. So, it was a brilliant idea to, well, do these audio entries instead. So, that's what I'll be doing for the foreseeable future, making audio entries for as many items here in the archives as I can. And it is my sincere hope that whoever listens to this, be it an intern or my inevitable replacement, or even you, Stuart, that you will find some merit in my dulcet tones as I do my best to explain just what kind of things we have down here. So, I think that's enough of an introduction. Better get to work. Let's see here. What's the first item on the docket today? Case file K-171, designation the key. It's easy to miss the key amidst some of the larger pieces that fill the Scarab Archives. It's not a large or ornate key. It's not some stereotypical huge brass thing that one might use to open the doors to some long-abandoned Victorian mansion. No, this key appears, for all intents and purposes, to be completely ordinary. Unfortunately, that's what makes it so dangerous. The key is the average size and weight of any ordinary house key. The color is a dim and rusted shade of gold. The head is topped with two curved indentions just below the ring hole. It is the, well, it's the blade of the key that should give one pause. The various notches and teeth may appear one way at first look and then totally different upon the second. That's because the key is ever-changing. Despite extensive testing, it seems impossible to determine which locks the key will or won't open. It's possible the key has some primitive form of intelligence and simply chooses when and where it will work. According to Lazarus Foundation records and extensive background checks, the key has worked a sum total of 2 times since it was first discovered in 2001. Given the nature of the key, however, it is borderline impossible to determine just how many have managed to open the particular door that the key unlocks. Let's see here. The key was discovered in the spring of 2001 in the town of Cottonwood, Alabama. A young man identified as one Robert Lee, family name it says here, discovered the key while playing in the woods near his home. Whether the key has a longer backstory that we aren't aware of, or whether it simply materialized at this particular moment in time, we can't be sure. In any case, young Mr. Lee pocketed the rusty old key and resumed his normal activities. The key remained in the possession of Mr. Lee for the next few years, hanging on the same keychain that held his house key. In late 2004, Mr. Lee arrived at home after school in the company of a friend. Hang on, there's a note here. Per this young man's parents' wishes, his name has been redacted from this report. Looks like Stewart's notes. Mr. Lee was apparently not paying attention as he used the key he'd found in the woods rather than his own house key. The key turned, the door opened, and the story of the unfortunate Mr. Lee came to an end. Now, while his young friend is now borderline catatonic and cannot tell us what he saw that day, his screams heard by first responders give some clue as to the nature of Mr. Lee's apparent demise. Specifically, three words repeated until the boy's vocal cords just gave out. Eyes, teeth, and endless. The key was collected as evidence and stored in the Cottonwood Police Department until the case was officially declared cold in 2014. The evidence was sorted for the most important pieces, among which the key was not counted among. It was set to be discarded, but by chance, Deputy Keith McGrath pocketed it and took it home. A journal reveals that McGrath became borderline obsessed over the next year with the key that seemed to be always changing. He conducted a number of home experiments, but was never able to get the key to turn. In desperation, he turned to the Lazarus Foundation. We advised him to cease his experiments until our researchers could arrive on site. He agreed, but then declared that he had one final door to check. Apparently, the answer came to him in a dream. We advised him to not follow through, but we lost contact shortly afterwards. When Lazarus researchers arrived the next day, they found only the foundation of a house. No sign of disaster, no wreckage, just a flat surface, like it had been wiped out. There was no powerful weather phenomenon that night, no tornado, no strong thunderstorm. It was a calm, cool, quiet night. McGrath's neighbors claimed they'd heard no noise save a single lonesome wail and a single hard gust of wind, and then nothing. Standing on the flat foundation was a single standing door and a frame, and the door's lock was the key. Despite researchers' best efforts, the key would not turn in the lock in which it was placed. On the other side of the door, researchers found McGrath's journal coated in an unknown black substance. When the substance was removed later for sampling, a single word was found scratched on the journal's surface. Dark. Traces of fingernails were found in the grooves. Since that day, Lazarus Foundation researchers still periodically check the key out of the Scarab archives for controlled testing. Given the nature of eyewitness accounts and other evidence, the Lazarus Foundation feels comfortable in labeling the key as an item of importance in Open Case File 01, the entity called the First Fear, or as it has sometimes been called, the Endless.